Liz Winstead has always looked at life a little differently as a little girl growing up in Minnesota. She often upbraided for asking impertinent questions and saying something inappropriate. This served her well when she became a comedian. She has written a new book of essays called Liz Free or Die that takes readers through the different chapters of her life, growing up, becoming a comic, helping to create The Daily Show back in 1996, which has since gone on to huge success. She's also involved in the creation of Air America. In the book, she has an easygoing, engaging style, whether she is writing about her attempts to become the state's first female altar boy or how she helped discover Rachel Maddow. It's a great pleasure to welcome Liz Winstead to the roundtable. Liz, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we love having you on the show. I'm a big fan of your work and what you have done. Give me a sense of how long it was this something that you wanted to do, or were you roped into this, writing
a book?
You know,
it's not something that I necessarily wanted to do when I was first approached my first year on The Daily Show to write a book, and I turned them down for about 15 years because I just didn't have a book in me. I was still processing what I was doing and still in the thick of it. And so when my father passed away in 2006, everything sort of prioritized for itself, and I got a lot of perspective, and I thought, you know what? I've been on this journey that's had amazing challenges and a lot of fun and I've been lucky to be able to be part of teams that have created great work, and then there's been struggle, and so I thought, you know what? I think I want to pick some of those stories from my life, even starting as a young girl, and just kind of reflect on what it's like to be on the path of a creative person. And it, in some ways, it even asks anybody, no matter what field of business that you're in, if it's a little bit challenging, you know, do you have the muscle that it takes? Because the bottom line is, when people go into the entertainment industry and they say things like, you know what, if I just get this one thing, I will have made it, that's never true. Just staying on the path is kind of making it, and once you figure that out, you're in a much better place.
You know, you talked about the death of your father. My in 2006, my mother died in 2008. What do you think it is about that sort of has you reprioritize things?
For me, it was there's an essay in my book that talks about my father dying, and
which is amazing.
Oh, thank you. And it reemphasized humor was a big part of our family.
Right.
And it was always something that I was so happy to have as a gift with being able to use it to talk to people and relate to it. But the power in it that I learned about how it can bring people together and take people who have huge differences across a wide swath of things and really bond us. That's the part that I learned from my dad and through his humor, is that it was like, I really need to carry this on because it really does make a difference in the course of any kind of social dignity. If you can be laughing with somebody who disagrees with you, you really have a good chance of having a conversation, that at least you can have a detente of some sorts.
You write in the book, you come from a large Catholic family. You're the youngest daughter in that family, and you grow up in Lutheran Minnesota.
The Lutheran police state of Minnesota. Not just Lutheran Minnesota. These people have Lutheran martial law.
So you even have ideas of perhaps going into the priesthood if God forbid that were allowed.
Well, yeah, I know, if God forbid that were allowed. Foolishly and admittedly, yes. And it wasn't necessarily because I had this drive for divinity. It was more that I was a member of a five-person family, that all strong-willed, opinionated talkers. And when you're the youngest of two parents and five kids, you don't get a word in edgewise. And so in my own little world, the two people who I saw that commanded the most attention and got the most respect were rock stars and priests. And I knew that I didn't really have a whole lot of talent at being a rock star. And so I thought, well, I'm going to be a priest. And, of course, I'm so silly that I thought that altar boy was the apprenticeship to being a priest. And in the 1960s, I also foolishly thought it would be perfectly okay if I just went to the priest and said, well, I would like to be an altar boy, because I just assumed no girl had ever done that before. And much to the priest's chagrin, he had to figure out some way of telling me I couldn't because the rules didn't allow it. And so his big excuse to me was, well, Liz, you can't be an altar boy because it's called altar boy.
Yeah.
And I was like, you are a priest. That's all you got, really? Like, I cannot believe that you think that I am that dumb. So I was trying to be helpful. So I said, well, what if when I did it, we called me an altar girl, which, of course, was seen as, you know, he'd never had anybody challenge him, you know, before.
Yeah.
And so he was like, well, I don't know. And then he just, of course, did what all adults do. They send you to another adult of an higher order. And he sent me to write a letter to the bishop of the archdiocese, which I found out later was a good thing to do because we had one of those bishops that enjoyed the drink, and they knew that if I just wrote off to the bishop that I would never hear back again, and I would have to just be settled with figuring out what I was going to do.
So then, I mean, so you're this, you know, you have these aspirations, if you will.
Yes.
And then you write in the book that at 17, you have sex for the first time, you become pregnant, and you end up having an abortion.
Yes.
What impact did that have on you and ultimately this large family unit?
Well, the interesting part, in the book, for me, it was the thing that impacted me the most was when I found myself in a position where, and when you're Catholic and you, the denial I think in our society is that our sex drive comes before our common sense and practicality. And I think a lot of times people like to just push that aside and act like that doesn't happen. Like they try to legislate as though we live in some world where there's abstinence and unicorns and you can just tell people to not have sex.
Yeah.
Which kind of isn't the case. And so being a Catholic girl, I made all kinds of rational thinking like, oh, well, if I have sex and I don't use birth control, I'll only be committing one sin. How about that? So that's how I'll go about that. So the effect that it had on me was when I was alone and I was with a 17-year-old boy who was, you know, completely unhelpful and terrified and ran away and had all the sympathy of a hockey player with a mullet would have. And it was finding myself at a crisis pregnancy center and feeling shamed and feeling like my mistake should define me and having somebody look through me as though I was not an individual, but that I was part of her plan, and she had wanted nothing to do with my plan. And that was what was more affecting on me, was that somebody was actively trying to shame me and manipulate me using, you know, anything but good advice, you know, with lies about the facts of what happens if you have an abortion. Twisting words like and saying things like, well, you know that abortion is against our law. And this was in 1978, and I was like, it's against our law?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought it wasn't against the law. And then, you know, she was saying her law, her religious law, but I hear that as a 17-year-old is manipulative. And so for me, I wrote extensively about being put in that environment and having somebody try to define me and how that changed the course of, for me, was that woman did not have any interest in what my destiny could be or where I would go or what I could become or helping me figure out how to live my best life. Because I always thought, well, if there's a God, that God knows I'm going to make mistakes and wants me to learn from them, doesn't want to demonize me and keep me placed and mired in the mistake I made. Like, that's just how I look at God. And so when that woman was like, well, I don't care about what you want to do and what your future could be and what you could bring to the table, I'm caring about you being defined by this mistake, and that is the life that you should live. And so I, oddly enough, the story ends by me getting on a bus and seeing a sign for Planned Parenthood on the other side of the bus that I saw the sign for this crisis pregnancy center. And going to Planned Parenthood and really having them talk to me in a real way about my needs and what I wanted and who I was and was I ready so that I could make the decisions for myself without having them tell me to, but having me ask myself the right questions. And I've never looked back or regretted my decision at all, and I feel really lucky that there was a place in my life that said, you've made a mistake, Let's get you on a path that you can live your own full self. And man, I took the bull by the horns, and I was given the gift of being able to have an open, free life to which I could explore all the possibilities that I could. And I've done a pretty darn good job of trying to fulfill it on the path.
You know, Liz, unfortunately, we're out of time. But here's my problem. I have a million questions for you. I wanna hear about Michelle Norris. I wanna hear about Rachel Maddow. I wanna hear about the Daily Show. Now, you're coming to the Rensselaerville Writers Festival in July.
I am.
So before then, can we have you back on the show and talk about all that stuff?
I would like nothing more.
Excellent. Well, I thank you, and thank you for letting me put you on the spot like that.
Oh, my gosh, no problem. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the interest.
The name of the book is Liz Free or Die. It's a fantastic, just a wonderful, wonderful book, Liz Free or Die, and we'll have Liz back coming up in July. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.